Dr. Alan Pearce is a leading neuroscientist here in Australia supporting the charity Sports Health Check, who were good enough to have a bunch of us at the Jam Factory last night to see this keenly anticipated movie, Concussion. And Dr. Alan Pearce joins in the studio. Good to see you, Doc.
Thanks very much for having me.
What'd you make of the movie last night?
Look, it was a Hollywood type of film that you would expect. I think, as you would expect, I was hoping to see a little bit more about the injuries themselves and the stories behind the guys that have committed suicide. But we got the
Hollywood treatment.
That's right, the love story and it all. Yeah, yep.
But it went into some detail, and it gave us the lead of Mike Webster, the former Pittsburgh Steeler, who was the first one to suffer, and that's when doing the autopsy, Dr. Bennett Amalu discovered that there was something irregular about the whole thing that led him to this chain of events that he discovered CTE, much against the NFL's wishes. And it was fascinating in that regard. It was a fascinating insight into how the whole thing played out. For people who have heard people talk about CTE, but they don't actually know what CTE is. It was described in the film last night. How best would you describe to listeners what CTE actually is?
Well, CTE is, and a warning, long words coming up.
Yep.
It stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and it's a neurodegenerative condition. So what you find is that with repetitive blunt head trauma, whether it's a full concussion or whether there's repeated blows, you get changes occurring in the brain tissue. Now, this over a period of time, this brain tissue degeneration will sort of manifest itself into problems like memory problems, behavioural problems, depression, motor movement disorders, and a range of things. But its pathology is a little bit different to what you would expect with Alzheimer's and dementia, even though they have very similar outcomes.
Yep. So you watch a game, a lot of us listening and even those who don't watch it routinely, we'll look at a game like American football and we'll say, well, of course that game is prone to create neurological issues like the ones that you're discussing. That is what this game does. It asks men to bang their heads in a helmet, but bang their heads against one another all the time at training, since they're kids, in matches, at brute force. I mean, some of the force that we heard, put out in terms of the G-forces was staggering last night about the size of that collision, the nature of the collision. We read the story yesterday about Sam Blees, and we know about Greg Williams, and we've heard Dean Kemp talk about it, the former West Coast Eagle, and I'm sure there are countless others who, with John Platten. How prone is our game, Australian football, to creating the sorts of issues for its athletes that a game like American football has?
Look, that's a really interesting question because, as you know, with American football, it's very much a forward-backwards game. And so the players are constantly going at each other in the sort of that sort of direction. One of the things about Australian rules football is that it's a 360-degree game.
Mm.
So you get impacts to the head from all quarters and all directions. And, the early data that we have with the impact forces are very similar to American football.
Yep,
so you're looking at between 40 and 100 Gs to the head from different directions as well, which is another complicating factor. It's not just coming in from the front or the back, it's coming from the side and it's rotating the head as well. And that puts a lot of stress on the nervous tissue underneath the skull. And, it has been sort of discussed in the literature that Australian football has 15 times the number of concussions as American football.
15 times?
Yes, yeah. Now, in that situation, we always seem to be talking about concussions, but as you saw with the movie last night, they're talking about sub-concussions.
It's not about being knocked out at all.
No, not at all. No. It's these small repetitive hits, and someone like a Mike Webster, who you mentioned, who died at 50 years of age, they've calculated that he would have had probably somewhere between 70 to 100,000 hits to the head, small hits to the head, constantly in training and playing as a junior, as a professional.
So where are we in Australia in terms of creating that sort of data on long-term players of our game?
Well, there is some research going on, but it's not enough. And it's in little pockets. It's not a strong urgency, though, the way that it seemed the Americans seem to be tackling this issue. So we have some, I know that there's a small study going on in Perth There's some research being done in Sydney in rugby union.
Yep.
We're doing some stuff here, and I've got some colleagues that we're looking at with ice hockey as well. So it's not nowhere near to the extent that is happening in America, where you have small universities who have over $1 million worth of funding doing research, while the big universities like Boston have landed $16 million grants to address this issue, and we're really well behind the eight ball. And it's not about competition; it's about understanding the research here in Australia with Australian athletes in an Australian environment. Yes, we can take information from America, but as you've seen within the media in the last few weeks, the questions are, well, we don't really know if it's happening here in Australia. We don't know if it's going to happen to me, or if it's going to happen to a player or someone who's come forward with some issues. We don't know. And this is where, we really need to get the scientific evidence.
Oh, no doubt. Dr. Alan Pearce, neuroscientist, has joined us. A lot of people are going to be having conversations about this, because later in the week, the movie Concussion will be released. And I know a lot of you listening will go and have a look at that movie, and your focus on the issue will be sharpened as a result of it. I've got no doubt about it. Are there other games in Australia that are more likely to create issues? You mentioned rugby union. I would imagine games like league and union, and I would think a game like soccer, where the head is constantly used in that game. Surely they would be, particularly the round ball game, would be of great interest for people who are studying the development, the onset and the effects of something like CTE?
Yes, and I guess what's happened is that we've had people saying, well, soccer's a safe sport and it doesn't have the same amount of physicality and aggression as say, the American football, Australian football. But there is research that is coming through America and the UK to show that the repetitive hitting with the headers is causing changes in the structure of the brain.
Yep.
And adding to that, in the UK, there's been some evidence to show that there have been a number of players from the 1960s and 1970s, and probably the most famous of them is Jeff Astill, who was diagnosed with CTE by Willie Stewart in Glasgow 3 or 4 years ago. So it's sport, it's all contact sports. Any sport that you're finding that there are repetitive traumas to the brain or to the head, then we've got to think about it.
You think about soccer back in the old day, before the balls were designed the way they are, and they're a much lighter ball now than they were. But when the balls got waterlogged back in the day, and they were made of leather and they were heavier, so guys who were playing, any time before sort of the 80s, I imagine we're talking about, and the amount of heading of balls they used to, and then head contact in, aerial contests, There would be old 67-year-old soccer players out there right now who may not even know. They're just thinking, well, I'm getting older, that's why I can't remember this, or that's why I'm getting a bit cranky, and that's why my behaviour's changing. And I imagine that the behavioural changes that happen before you get to the point where a guy wants to put a gun in his mouth or hang himself or whatever it might be, it's the behavioural changes that give you an insight into the fact that something is not quite right, that the minute that starts happening on a regular basis, that the way you used to be is not the way you are now. That must be a green light for anybody who feels like they might be a victim of this sort of head trauma. Be aware of what might be coming down the pike a little bit here.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the reasons why with my research a few years back, we were just going to be looking at the elite players and comparing them to age-matched healthy people who've never played that sort of sport. But as a result of Greg Williams sort of talking about his issues, we had a deluge of people who played sport at the amateur levels and other sports who were saying, well, exactly what you said. I thought I was just getting
old.
And I didn't realise that maybe at 48 or 49 years of age, that's not really old.
Yeah, and that's not abnormal. Like at 49 or 50.
That's right.
Which is clearly something to be worried about.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you, a couple of people want to have a chat about this with you, so I hope you're happy to take some calls. Have you had the opportunity to work with any ex-AFL players? Have you studied and had, in a clinical sense, any AFL players come across you?
For the record, I'm a scientist.
Yep.
I'm not a clinician.
Yep.
So the research I've done has been in a sort of a experimental base. So the study that I did that we published in 2014 had AFL, ex-AFL, VFL players, and we compared them to amateurs.
Right.
And then we compared both those groups to age match controls.
Right.
So we have had former AFL players involved, but I can't say that for confidentiality reasons. Of course. Reasons.
And yes. Is the data that you've obtained so far suggesting that the players at a more elite level are more prone to get this? Or is this something that all players across the board, no matter where they played their footy or soccer or whatever it might be, they're all just as likely to be victims to this?
Well, what I was looking at was electrical changes in the brain. So a slightly different question to what the movie was about.
Yep, yep.
And then also measuring their reaction times and some cognitive or memory type tasks. And we originally were hypothesising that the elite guys would be showing much worse. But what we found counterintuitive to our thinking was that there was actually no difference between the amateur players who recorded 2.5 concussions officially,
yep,
versus nearly 4 concussions for the elite. But we didn't find any difference in the outcomes compared to the healthy. So
that's alarming.
And this is why we need to do more research. And this is why we need to get the funding and support to do more research to look at this.
Oh, no doubt. Dr. Alan Pearce, neuroscientist, talking about CTE, the effects of concussion and subconcussion hits on the heads of people who play the sports they love, thinking that these sports were safe. Clearly, the thinking about that's changed significantly since some of the data that's come out of America and the class action that's been filed over there and the payout that the NFL have instituted over there. We'll have a quick chat about that in a moment. But Michael's in East Bentley at 22 past 12 and wants to join in. Good afternoon to you, Mick.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks for taking the call. Wondering if this will just, as it gets looked into, whether it'll go off into different sort of tangents as well, like, for instance, if someone's been concussed or slightly concussed and they take the field again and maybe their judgment's slightly impaired and they suffer another type of injury. I know a mate of mine playing junior footy, he said he got a bit of a knock, you know, you'll be right sort of thing, went back on, flew for a mark and landed awkwardly and wrecked his knee. And he always thought that maybe his judgment, his ability to read the play was a bit off. So do you think that also comes into it as well, not just a repetition of head knocks like other injuries?
Yeah, we actually know there's been nearly 3 studies in the last couple of years to show that after a concussion injury, your risk of injury is actually increased by 50%.
Is that right?
Any sort of injury. So it could be, you know, due to slowed reaction times, yep, changes, yep, in decision. You could roll your ankle. You can go in for a contest when you may have would have pulled out before because you're not quite judging the situation.
Yep.
And these are studies in America and Sweden.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? The reaction time's impaired as a result. So there you go, Mick. Ash is in Blackburn, 23 past 12. Oh, hi, Ash.
Oh, g'day, Andy. G'day, Alan. Thanks for taking the call. I'm a junior footy coach out in the eastern suburbs, and we're just getting to the age group now where it's becoming optional whether the kids wear helmets or not during the game. I'm just wondering what the latest data is on the benefits of wearing helmets, and especially in junior football.
Well, we know that helmets don't protect the brain from concussion. They protect the skull, the bones of the skull. So if you're going in, you stop a potential fracture and that sort of stuff. But the brain is sitting in a sack of fluid. And just like when you have some ice in the cup and you roll it around, that's your brain in some ways like sitting in the skull.
Yeah, yeah.
So as soon as you get an impact to the head, the brain will continue to keep moving in one direction. And then it'll move
until
back.
Until it hits the inside of the skull. Yep.
Hit skull, and then it'll move back and hit the, you know, have the opposite side as well. So helmets don't necessarily stop the brain from moving, and that's what everyone is trying to develop. But at the moment, there's no effective helmet to protect from concussions, and it's unlikely to be.
It's impossible, isn't it?
That's right.
It's impossible. And unless you can get something inside the head that stops the brain from moving when there is a collision, then there's nothing you can do about it.
That's it. And the woodpecker analogy.
Of course, that was put up in the movie last night. Can you test for... In the movie last night, it was discovered as a result of autopsy. So Dr. Bennett Amalu was discovering all this stuff posthumously. Is there a way of testing for CTE while people are still alive?
No. At the moment, there's still no test for CTE in living people. You can only detect it at the end. So what's happening in America with a lot of their big studies, they're they're identifying players who are showing symptoms, they're recording their symptoms, recording their as they progress.
Degenerate, yep.
And then measuring their brain after death. There is, and part of this massive grant that the Boston University have been given, they're trying to work towards the holy grail of measuring CTE in the brain in living people.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're looking at it somewhere between 5 to 10 years from now.
Okay.
In saying that, CTE is not detected in everyone, and there are players, and there was a case last week of a ice hockey player who passed away 49 years of age and showed all the signs but did not have CTE.
We have to get a break in a minute, but there's one question I do want to ask you. Dr. Alan Pearce, neuroscientist, talking about CTE and repeated head trauma in our game. The story yesterday, the AFL has knocked back any compensation claims from some of the players who went to see them. Doc, now I know that you're a scientist, you're not a lawyer, but where will the compensation, if you look down the track in Australia, we've seen what's happened in America, the NFL paid these guys off, no, on the proviso that there'll be no releasing of information, take it now, get your $5 million payout, $800 million there or thereabouts paid out, but you will not tell anybody why you actually got sick in the first place, right? Are you smart enough to know, in terms of this conversation, where the compensation conversation is likely to go in Australia regarding this for football?
There won't be any compensation until there's evidence.
Right.
I mean, it's as simple as that.
Okay.
We can't rely on American evidence to talk about Australians, and that's the short story.
So who's Paul McCrory?
Paul McCrory?
Paul McCrory.
He's the neurologist who's head of the AFL working party.
So Sam Blee said that Paul McCrory had told him that another concussion could be catastrophic, quote, "There is the risk of early onset of dementia and Alzheimer's." That is coming from Sam Blees, from the leader of this AFL. So if I put to you that is clearly evidence that within the depths of this working party from the AFL, that they know just how dangerous the repeated head traumas sustained by AFL players are.
Well, I mean, when I read that quote as well, I was quite surprised. I didn't expect that Sam would say something like that, because of obviously the connotations,
of course.
And is, you know, does that mean that there's an acknowledgement or not? You know, I think you know from the AFL's perspective what they would respond with, but I think, you know, that we know generally that for, no, outside of sport, if you're having a lot of head trauma, it can lead to mental health problems and
of course.
Potential dementia. Anyway, the question has always been, well, is it Alzheimer's, which is something that you would get anyway, or is it CTE,
which is sport-related?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of water to flow under the bridge, like the proteins through the brain, as we learned about CTE last night. Thanks for coming in, Doc.
Anytime.
We'll continue to watch this space.
No worries.
Dr. Alan Pearce, neuroscientist, thanks to Sports Health Check. I'm sure a lot of you are going to see concussion sooner rather than later, once it releases later this week. And I'm very happy to have conversations on this show on the way through.